Hello, my name is Dr. Vanessa Kimball, and I am a baker. But I'm also someone who has studied and researched the impact of bread on our health for many years. I run the Sourdough School in Northamptonshire, and my specialism is bread and the gut microbiome and the impact on our mental health. But I'm also trained as a nutrigenetic practitioner, meaning I look at the way that bread impacts people according to their genetics. It helps me to personalise bread. And in this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to someone who I hope you are going to find as interesting as I did. What I'd love is for you to listen and think about the bread that you bake, eat, and share with your family. Because bread is a staple, it's our most basic food, and I believe it is the foundation to good health.
Hello, welcome to the Sourdough School. I'm joined today by someone who I've known for many years, I consider a friend. Someone who inspires me. And when I'm talking about Josiah, I know he's in front of me here, I describe him as being a linchpin. And when you're connecting systems, you need people who are the connectors. And that is what Josiah does. He connects lots of different parts of the system. And I think that the work that he and Nick and the team do at Homodods actually are the other half of what I do. And I'm going to let Josiah tell you what he thinks he does, not what I think he does. Josiah, welcome. Can you tell us a little bit more about Homodods and what you do day to day and why this is part of a systems change in the way we approach bread and food?
Oh, thanks, Vanessa, and thanks for the introduction too. Yeah, it's nice to be a linchpin, although I'm not entirely sure that's what I am, obviously, as you can probably imagine. So Homodod really is a business that was set up to do much of what you've described, to create relationships across the food system and to reimagine or to remake how it is that we come by our food. So that's not just how it's grown, but that's also in how we eat it, how we cook it, how we share it. And Homodod grew out of a project in Norwich. And for your overseas listeners, that's a small city in East Anglia, in Norfolk, in England, with about 160,000 people. And we just wanted to know what a more sustainable, resilient food system might look like. How do we feed ourselves healthily without crushing the planetary boundaries that we know we need to live within when it comes to climate and biodiversity and so on? And the big revelation that really we had early on was that we could do this. You know, we have all the technology, we have all the knowledge, we can reshape the world in a way that is far more sustainable, far more resilient, and better able to cope with an uncertain future, but also to leave us thriving, healthy, well, happy. And that to do that, we just needed to make some changes to the agricultural system. And that seems so small.
I think
particularly what emerged from that was this idea of, I mean, you've talked about me being a linchpin in a system, and whether or not that is true, I'll leave others aside. But the thing that we discovered really, or that we recognized as being this incredible lever for positive change, was leguminous crops. So those are those plants that are able to fix nitrogen from the atmosphere, essentially make their own food. They don't need synthetic fertilizers. And because of that, they have a much lower carbon impact, but also they use that nitrogen that they're grabbing out of the atmosphere by working with soil-borne bacteria. They're using it to make protein, and that protein usually forms beans and peas, pulses, crops that we can eat. And we realized that if we incorporated more of these leguminous crops into the rotation, not only could we meet a lot of our protein requirements in a really low input way, but there would also be nitrogen available for other crops in a rotation. And that might include cereals, but it could include other seeds. It could include lay crops that are grazed by livestock. There's a whole host of reasons why we might want to add these particular species into our fields. And by doing that, we could begin that process of changing the way we think about our food and the food system.
Well, that leads me very nicely into something that I wanted to ask you, really. There are lots of flours on the market with big claims about the way that they are making a difference in our food system. Have you ever seen another flour or anything similar that actually contains all four parts of the regenerative crop cycling system, like the botanical blends? And can you just explain to people why this is so highly unusual to be able to have flour that supports regenerative farming practices and this kind of approach to bread and supports the farmer 100% of the time?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is no. And I think maybe we should talk about why that is in a minute. And I've got some questions for you too. I think we should unpick that a little bit. But no, it's really unusual. I mean, we're at a point in history where we have a very reductive approach to the way that we eat cereal crops. We remove all the bran, we remove all the goodness, we produce a white powder, which we then put into a processed loaf that's made in a factory and sold in a huge shed somewhere outside your local town or in your community. And that is extractive in every single sense. It's extractive of the soil, it's extractive of us, it's extractive of the ecosystem that sustains us, it's bad for our health. And there isn't really anyone that is doing what you are doing, which is to arrive at a flour that contains not only all the bran that we should be eating in our wheat, but that also contains other species that can be grown either in the same field or in the same rotation. And so that might include the pulses that we've just talked about, peas, beans, chickpeas, lentils, but it might also include seed crops, things like chia and camelina, and it might include other cereals that form a part of a rotation. And it could include what we might otherwise think of as weeds that grow within a cereal crop. So we've been harvesting red poppy seeds, which can be added into a flour blend and bring a lot of extra nutrition, but also importantly bring an extra economic return to the farmer who's harvesting those things anyway. They're just waste, they're composted. So why not eat them?
Exactly my point. I've actually got a visual on that here.
Mm.
And this is it's an example of what, you know, are considered to be those weeds. And actually weeds is interesting because who named them weeds? Because we evolved eating this huge range of diversity. And the diversity in the environment and the diversity in the gut are directly related both to the health of the planet and to the health of our gut microbiome and our health. It's a story that is very personal to me, but one of the key studies and the key things that really brought it home to me was in about 2015-16, there was the American Gut Project that showed categorically that the higher or the more diversity that you had in your gut, the more robust your health. And gut health is related to mental health as well as physical health. And they identified a very key number, and that key number was 30. And it was 30 different plants that delivered these fibers. And very importantly, and this is the word I want to hang off, is polyphenols, which are a group of naturally occurring compounds found in plants that are renowned for their antioxidant properties and numerous health benefits. And when these polyphenols are included in our diet, they help combat oxidative stress, they reduce inflammation, they support gut health, and this is key to overall well-being. It's particularly high quality, diverse, colourful grains, and Again, not only when we did this reductive approach, decide this is key. They didn't just reduce the diversity down to monoculture, which is what we see in our bread and in our food system. They actually significantly reduced the different colours and variety of polyphenols in the grain. And these are the ones that, promote cardiovascular health, help control blood sugar, and actually also are cancer protective and protect against chronic diseases in the population. So this is the XXX that I make here. This is the bag of XXX here. And you actually have to hand assemble all of these.
Yeah.
You wish they came from one field, but they don't.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And I was wondering, obviously we do carefully hand blend all the ingredients, and I thought it would be interesting to hear a bit more. Interesting for me to hear a bit more as well. All of these species don't actually grow in the same field. It would be lovely if they were all growing together and we combine them together, but that would be really, really difficult. Some of them do, and we do a lot of bicropping and polycropping work, both experimental and actual, with the farmers that we are engaged with. But how is it that you have arrived at the particular formulation? So, for example, the XXX that we're working on, how have you picked the plant species that are delivering the polyphenols you want? And how are you assessing those individual ingredients and the ratios that they're included at? How have you got there?
That's a really good question. I think I'm going to keep it really as tight and succinct as I can, because it has been over 20 years of work. I think the first thing we have to say is my aim and objective came from two places. The first was actually redesigning the way that we look at bread as something to optimize gut health and support health. And I came at it from a lens of value system, which was not a monetary system. It wasn't a cost system. It was about optimizing our health as a basic human right, a right to feel well, and a right to be able to live your life optimally in the best possible way. And that really is about gut health. And then the second thing is about the environment and valuing where we live and the way that we treat others and the ethical side of the flour that we produce is not about something that tastes ethical. It's about the way that we treat others and people within the system. And it's reflective of a value system of nourishing and not feeding people, but nourishing. And I did a doctorate. I did the dietary intervention studies, during which we were supported by a lot of people who had an interest. Gilchester's, Andrew Wilkinson, helped me put together the botanical blends initially. I had Mockmill, who sent all the participants a mill, because at the time you were not able to mill my blends. It was still being created at that point. And the creation of our botanical blends, especially the XXX, was actually a concentrated high level of these polyphenols. And in particular, the first blend, the meadow blend, was about changing people's understanding of monoculture. Milling the whole meadow was a visual understanding of diversity in the environment. We also wanted people and empower people to actually approach their own local food system and their own seasonal ingredients that they could add to their own meadow. So essentially create their own local meadow. It doesn't have to be a meadow, it could be what's in your pantry, but it was an idea of getting people to connect to their environment and back to their gut, which is a zero plus. It was a base blend that people can add to, so they can personalize it. And that's very important, to be able to personalize one's bread. A simple example is perhaps if you were making bread for a breastfeeding mother who had a little one with a bit of colic, you might add something like some fennel in there, or some caraway, which, or aniseed into your blend, which then has a positive impact on the way that mother would produce a breast milk. And there's plenty of studies showing that certain ingredients are essentially preventative health. They help us to function and to nourish ourselves. And then this last blend, Triple X, is a game changer, really, because this is about elevating your bakes. It's a booster. We did play around a little bit with the idea of calling it we looked at a couple of different names, Josiah, and I think you were you and Nick settled really on the fact that it was an enhancer rather than an improver.
Yeah, we didn't like the word improver. Too many industrial baking connotations.
I like the idea of, but it does improve your bread.
Yeah, I mean, it actually really
improves it in real life.
Yeah, no, it genuinely improves it. It's not. I think. I think there is actually a good point there, which is that the mixes are about helping people build people's confidence about what they're including in their bread, and that by supplying them with a premix, you don't have to make a loaf. In fact, we definitely recommend you don't make a loaf 100% with one of these blends, but that you might use them in your starter, or you might use them as you build. But I think it would be great, Vanessa, because it's a question we get a lot here. We get a lot of phone calls. People are really interested in the blends. They want to know how to use them. For someone, and I think a lot of our customers are not necessarily confident bakers. They didn't catch the sourdough bug during lockdown, and they're not nurturing their starter. What is the best way for someone to begin to incorporate these into their cooking and baking?
Well, so the first thing I want to say there is, Josiah, that you don't have to use sourdough.
Right. Okay.
You know, I mean, yes, of course, I want you to use sourdough, because sourdough helps you unlock those polyphenols and unlock the matrix, that plant structure, and optimize the amount, we call it bioavailability, but the amount that your body gets to take up, because sourdough essentially pre-digests the grain for you. It's those microbes in the sourdough, like the microbes in your gut, they have a little munch first, and they free up the ability of your body to pick up the minerals, the vitamins, and specifically what I really get excited about is these polyphenols, these antioxidants that actually deliver so much to our gut and to our health and lowering inflammation. But in here, you've got black wheat, black barley, spelt, rye, emmer, and you've got these poppy seeds, and they're all dark, 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 and they add this complexity and flavor and depth to any bake. So the other day I was asked if I could make some shortbread. And of course the shortbread recipe is a white flour. It's a white roller milled sugary biscuit that raises your blood sugar. And I was like, okay. Now I know that if I make it just for the Triple X, yes, of course my microbes will be having a party, but actually this is about an enhancer or an improvement to existing recipes. So I took a recipe, it was actually one that my grandmother gave to me, and this is very typical of how you can use it. And I simply replaced 15% of the white flour with this very intense, dark, high fiber blend, and that lifted the biscuit and delivered a significant amount more fiber and more nourishment simply by adding it and replacing it. So one of the thing about the Triple X is it's one that you can use like probably anything from 5 to 20% in any recipe. I would stand by that, any recipe. So not just sourdough, I mean, obviously sourdough is my passion, the bread is there, but you could use it in pasta, you could put it in your pastry, you could if you were making a beef pie and you were making your pastry for that, there's absolutely no reason that any recipe whatsoever, from your favorite Victoria sandwich cake through to, you know, your biscuits, cakes, puddings, pies, anything that you bake, in any way, shape or form can be enhanced with this blend. And that's what's so revolutionary about it. It makes it affordable, but also your family don't initially, you know, when you try and change your family's baking desire and you go from a refined white flour straight into, you know, a whole grain fermented, often people aren't ready for it. Their taste buds have to change.
Nah.
Their digestive system has to catch up with like the shock of fiber.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see that with people moving to a diet that includes more pulses and grains and whole grains. And I think it's, you know, we are supposed to eat, what is it, 30 grams of fiber a day. And we're all way below that. I mean, even I suspect will struggle to do that. And I eat an awful lot of fiber. And if you're not eating any, then it is going to be a real wake up call for your gut. And that's something that has to be introduced really slowly. And maybe in a way that we are talking about a shift in the way that people live and the way that they eat. And you talk a lot about baking in particular as part of a lifestyle medicine. And I'd be useful perhaps, I mean, it'd be useful for us, I think, to be able to talk a bit more to our customers about that. But I think it'd be useful to hear a bit more about your perspective on what that actually means in practice.
Well, baking as lifestyle medicine came about because I teach so many medical professionals here at the Sado School, and there was a formalization of what preventative health was. And it was put together by the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine, by some very clever people who actually brought together six pillars of lifestyle medicine. And the six pillars include social nourishment, not taking things that harm you. So from the bread point of view, avoiding emulsifiers, like, you know, avoiding things that, you know, white refined flour that raise your blood sugar, so that it really fits this approach to baking into preventative health. Your six pillars also sleep, for example. So it sounds strange, but when you look at bread from a lifestyle medicine perspective or point of view, you know, if you're eating a refined white bread or a refined white food, you can raise your blood sugar and then that crashes. Now, if that happens at night, your cortisol will raise and then your insulin will kick in, your cortisol lifts, and you suddenly wake up in the night for no apparent reason, and you can find that people eating refined white ultra processed diets actually have insomnia. Now, if you approach baking as lifestyle medicine and you include whole grains and you include a way of eating that helps control blood sugar and deliver some of those things that your body needs to make melatonin, for example, that helps you go to sleep, you find these ingredients and you find this approach in a way of baking that can support health. And what we saw, for example, in my doctorate was that people started sleeping through the night. Mm-hmm. And we could actually see those changes within the gut microbiome. So you were asking me earlier about how these were developed. I did 12 dietary intervention studies and looked specifically at the gut microbiome, the changes in the balance of those microbes in the gut, and looked at then that how that impact people's health. So we looked at blood sugar, we looked at blood pressure, we saw changes in the composition and the balance of the gut microbiome. And we saw increases in Akkermansia, for example, which was a microbe that is inversely related with both obesity and cardiovascular disease. And we saw people drop in their weight, started to drop as well if they were overweight. And we saw such significant changes. Now, this is lifestyle medicine. This is preventative health.
So these are all indices of chronic ill health, essentially. These are things that if you carry on in a particular way are going to cause you problems.
Yeah. And it's really we're at war. And I say that in a very serious way with an ultra processed globalized food system that is actually we've bought into because it's addictive. It's been designed to optimize profit for these companies. And the design of the baking as lifestyle medicine was actually a very beautiful, very gentle, very quiet, but very powerful way to bake, to live and eat our bread and share our bread with the people we love in a value system that actually is about the world we want to live in and supporting that world we want to live in, which is to nourish the people we love, to care for the people that actually food farmers are really food producers, to look after the soil systems. And it was designed as a circular system to help support change as lifestyle medicine. So actually, what's very interesting, the botanical blend flowers are you empower us to do this, and the profit from the flower here actually trains bakers on how to use this flower to help support others. So the whole of this project that we've worked on, that we've created and developed, supports the farmers, supports regenerative farming practices. It supports people's and empowers people to bake in a way that helps them, but it comes back into the sourdough school. And we had you, Josiah, and Nick were the people who've helped put that together. And this year, I think we gave out £50,000 worth of educational awards, which is my turnover. in educational awards, these people join a diploma. Often they will be looking after someone else. And that's what brings me to the question, what is baking as lifestyle medicine? When I was describing it the other day to someone in a really tight way, is baking in a way that cares. It cares for, you know, often people, when they come here, the first question I ask them is who they're baking for. And so often, almost always, someone is that you're baking for someone you love, someone you care about, someone who perhaps is having an autoimmune disease or mental health, or, you know, people often, preventative health is a lovely idea, but often people come to me when things have already gone wrong.
I mean, I think that's so great. I think that's such a connection as well to what we were talking about at the beginning about a food system built on relationships rather than on transactions. And I think also within that answer that you've just, you know, that what you've just described, which is big and complicated, you hinted at the big problem that we face, which is this corporate control and capture of our food system. And the fact that, you know, we are eating, I don't know how many loaves a week, is it 9 million loaves a week that we eat or something along those lines? And they get most of those are made in massive factories in the Midlands somewhere and in East London, shipped out daily into supermarkets in plastic bags, and nutritionally are pretty empty. And I just wonder, you know, your mission is to change everything. Your vision is for a new food system. How do they fit into that? Do they fit in at all? What's the answer?
No, if you open the newspaper and you look at the world, there is a constant message of disempowerment, of it's not worth it, it's all over, you can't do anything. And I think it's in the interest of large, huge companies to make you feel that that it doesn't matter. You know, you can't do anything, so just go with the flow of what everybody's doing. And I often have the most reaction from people, Josiah, and often a very emotional reaction when people realize they can and are able to do something about it, and to actually take control of your food and to say, here's my boundary, this is enough. And I, again, if I said to a normal person, hey, what I want you to do is make a bread with a massive amount of fiber and diversity, and I want you to go out and I want you to gather 30 different ingredients, and I want you to make your bread with this. This is the most powerful, most nourishing way to make your bread. There is not in a million years, I would not be able to get a normal person to make the healthiest bread, because it's not possible. And when I described you as a linchpin, what you've done is, as Hobmid Dodds in this, is you have actually enabled hundreds and thousands of people to regain the control and the baseline of their diet. And what you've actually done is given them the tools and the ability to stand up to the system by delivering fiber, diversity, and and gut health in their daily bread, which is a foundation to everything else. And that feeling of people being able to do that, it comes back in 100 times a day to me or more, as people are able to actually live by their values, to be able to nourish people, to be able to take care of the people they love, and to make a stand to say, this far is far enough. I no further. This is my bread, the way I feed my family. This is a boundary that you're not going to cross. And you've actually empowered people to be able to do that with milling these blends. So for me, I can't remember the question, but it's something that I think we can. So standing up to the system is one person at a time. It's you are the system. You're not, so when we talk about the system, people go, oh, that's outside. We talked about this yesterday. That's someone else. No, you are the system. You, the baker, your hands, your family, your mixing, your feeding, your sharing, your time, your energy, your money, your power is in that moment that you get your hands in the dough and you mix that bread, you take it out of the oven and you share. You are the system. And this is what I teach. And it's one person at a time. And I've been doing it for decades, one person at a time. And we shift that dial and we push back and inspire others to do the same through this kind of delicious, beautiful, aromatic bread and baked goods that that let's be honest, is, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to be an activist rocking something so delicious out of the oven and making your house smell of amazing bread and just going, wow, you know, activism as with butter and jam, you know. I think it's fantastic. It's one at a time, Josiah, and that's why I don't get overwhelmed, because I mean, you know, you're doing this daily. This is what you do. You must feel this, Josiah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what we need to hold in mind, I think, always, is that we're living in a historically in a 70-year blip. You know, settled agriculture, maybe 15,000 years of farming and baking and selling of bread and bread products. For the last 70 years, we've had the Chorleywood bread making process in the UK, this fast fermentation that's damaged our health, I believe. And we've had a supermarket system that supports and sustains it. But it's not normal. And I think those big manufacturers know it's not normal. And that is why they spend tens of millions a year on advertising and pay Hollywood stars millions of quid to come over and feature in their adverts to convince us that what it is that they're offering us is completely normal and always has been. But it's not, and it doesn't need to be. And I think that's the thing that you need to hold in mind when people say, oh, we can't change anything. Everything can change. I think there's a fantastic Ursula Le Guin quote, which I really love, science fiction writer. And she wrote, we live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable, but then so did the divine right of kings. And I think that idea that we're in a time that is unchangeable is really easy to be oppressed by, but actually everything can change. And we just need to realize that and to use the tools that we have in our hands to make that happen. And I think, although it seems modest and small, just changing the way you bake, just changing the food that you're engaging with, just talking to a farmer that you're buying food from, just engaging with your baker, is a huge part of that change process. I think it's really, really exciting. And I think that's why the diversity blends are just so thrilling, because we have this opportunity to tell complex stories that we're often told people are not ready for because we live in a TikTok generation. But that is just so not true.
That's fantastic. Josiah, I think I'm going to ask you one last question. Do you have a favourite and why? Because there's three so far. And is there one that you would recommend to, you know, people for the very first time listening to this and they're like, oh, which one is the one that you just thought?
So I think, if I'm honest, it's the first one, which we call Meadow Blend. I'm not sure that you call it Meadow Blend anymore.
It's a meadow. It's where the idea came from.
It's beautiful and it's aromatic because it's got the rose petals in it. It took us a year to work out how to mill it through our stone mills. It wasn't an easy process. So I do have a slight love-hate relationship with it, but I think it is beautiful looking and it smells amazing, particularly when you first mill it. The smell that comes out of the mill is extraordinary. And I use it. I don't use it. I'm not a home baker, to be honest, because I've got a bakery just near me, and Henrietta at Wakens bakes me lovely bread. But I use it in things like pastry. So I use it a lot in pastry, and I think it just adds such a lot of extra flavour and complexity to even the simplest kind of pastry bakes.
Oh, that's amazing. I always have a huge wave of affection and gratitude to the whole team at Hold My Dogs. I think that often the kind of level of work that you put in to making this happen is invisible and unseen. And I hope that anyone who's listening to this will look not just at the Triple X blends, which are obviously amazing, but actually have a whole wide range of other flours, connecting farmers and other ingredients. If you want to make your own blends up and you want to, I say pimp your own, that's the zero plus. Josiah, just quickly, what other things are you selling that people could use to make up their own versions? Seaweed, is that one of the things? And you sell lots of other things that people can personalize it, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we sell things. And this really started during lockdown when there were a number of smaller suppliers that we'd been either buying ingredients from or who had been our customers. And they came to us and said, well, hang on a minute, all of our shops are shut. You know, we're selling through local farm shops. They're not there anymore. And we took the decision just to start offering the things that they were making, which are amazing. And seaweed is one of those things which I think can really easily be added into baking, and we sell flakes and things. You don't even need to mill them. You can just squish them up and they add a lot of flavor. And you can add seeds, and we sell a lot of seeds.
Heckles, were they something?
we haven't got any at the moment, but we do work with farmers that are doing that kind of thing. And I think just thinking that if you add a few percent of something, it's not going to affect the nature of your bake. Is very unlikely to change it in any way. And that might include things like camelina seeds, for example, which are this sort of nutty oil seed that the Romans loved, which, you know, if you're making an egg pasta, just put a teaspoon of that in. It'll help bind it, but it'll also bring an extraordinary flavour. All sorts of different ingredients that you could put in.
So there we have it. We have got Meadow Blend, which is the original concept. We've got the Zero Plus, which you can go on the Hold My Dogs site, get the Zero Plus, and then add in lots of other things into your basket. And you can even add a little bit more flour from, you know, the Hold My Dogs have lots of other flours. So don't just think of the Triple X, think of all the other flours that they do. And then obviously Triple X, which is that enhancer. Josiah, we both have lots of people probably waiting for us to get on with our day. Thank you so much. It's been just lovely chatting.
It's a pleasure, Vanessa. It's nice to have an opportunity to ask these questions, because often we're just discussing, you know, trouble at mill, as it were. And sometimes it's quite nice to be able to step back and say, what on earth is baking as a lifestyle medicine? And to really kind of unpick some of those questions that we don't actually necessarily have much time for. So it's great. It's lovely. It's lovely to have this chat.
Fantastic. And then anyone who is looking and listening to this, if you go to hobmydods.co.uk, and look in the search bar, you'll find all the products. Josiah, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Cool.
If you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as I enjoyed chatting with my guests, then you might like to find out a little bit more about what I do. Well, I teach courses both online and in person at thesourdoughschool.com. I also write regularly for sourdough.co.uk. And I have a couple of Instagram accounts that you might like to follow. Sourdough School, Sourdough Club. Oh, and I have a personal one, Vanessa Kimball. I really do love to hear people's thoughts and feedback about, well, the books I write, the podcast, the features, or if you have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you for listening.